Being Programmed to Chill, a show about business, crime, parapolitics, and esoterica, with your host, Jimmy Fallon Gong.
I'm sitting outside my house right now.
Yeah.
Is this okay level of noise, or should I go in like my bedroom or something?
There's some very pleasant birds I can hear. It's not bad, actually.
Okay. Well, then if that's all right, I'm just going to run inside and grab a drink, and then I'll come right back out here.
Cool.
Yeah. LaCroix in hand. And
what flavor?
This one is the lime. So
interesting.
So just, although I've been drinking those caffeine waters too, and I like those. Those are pretty good.
I need to try those.
We've talked about Diet Coke before, but I still like, you know, this, that sound, you know?
Mm-hmm. There's something about a nice, lightly carbonated beverage.
Well, that and I've been drinking a lot of kombucha too, or not a lot, but like maybe one or two a day. And I was like, am I going to pay $2.50 for a fucking kombucha at like Walmart? And then I realized I used to pay like $9 for Diet Coke every day.
Yeah, I got a water kombucha down though, because it's sometimes like it's like too much like vinegar.
Yeah, it depends. There's a whole bunch of different brands that like I've been trying now, and some are definitely better than others.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to ask you before we get into Dreamscape here real quick. So I've been reading this book on Barry Goldwater, right?
Okay.
Specifically his campaign for president.
Okay.
And of course he was running against Lyndon B. Johnson. And during the election, like a month before the election, one of LBJ's top guys, his name was Walter Jenkins. He got arrested for, I guess, basically blowing dudes in the YMCA bathroom.
Right.
And so the Republicans tried to weaponize it, but like the public didn't really care. Not necessarily that they wouldn't care about what he was arrested for, but like nobody knew Jenkins. He wasn't like a famous guy. So like it just didn't stick on LBJ. Right.
Right.
But the Democrats probably found the funniest explanation for Jenkins' behavior.
What'd they have?
They said that he was, because of the stress of the campaign, that he was suffering from combat fatigue.
And that's why he was blowing dudes in the bathroom?
So I wanted to ask your expert opinion. Is that a normal side effect of combat fatigue, or is that spurious?
Well, I will say that hypersexuality can be a response to trauma.
Mm.
So perhaps like the risk-taking aspect of it and the like public nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like actually, yeah, we can, there's some ways to like laugh at that, but also it's because if you think about it, like sexual activity is one of the few ways to get a rush that's similar to say like the adrenaline rush you get from being in fear of your life.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe.
Interesting.
David Foster Wallace wrote a short story about that.
About Jenkins?
About Walter Jenkins.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I bought his book of short stories. And there's one that's, or one of the books, I don't remember which one. But one of them, the only one I could really get through, was the one told from the perspective of Jenkins.
What the heck?
And like, yeah, it's a really good story, actually.
So I'm certain I probably read it way back when I was like younger. Oh, dang.
Yeah, let's see. I think it might even be called Lyndon or something.
Interesting.
Yes, it was Lyndon.
Okay. Right on. I knew it sounded vaguely familiar.
Yeah, no, and that's where I first heard about the whole thing and then like looked it up and was like, huh, that's interesting. But I mean, also like sexual politics in the 40s and 50s were fucking wild. You know, like the army slash like CIA, it was whatever that interim group was, the CIG,
mm-hmm.
The dude that got the best information in Europe was, he did so because he was gay, and he just made friends with all the senior officers' wives, and they were all like, hey, look, like, so-and-so says you need to do this. Well, I don't want to, honey. Well, listen, my friend, like, he's pretty insistent. He's got good taste, you know? And then he was later purged from the intelligence services by, like, the McCarthy purges. The Lavender Scare, they called it.
Yeah, there were a lot of interesting sex rings around that time.
I mean, DC is like a fucking like a sketchy place, man. Kind of always has been.
Well, did you see Madison Cawthorn just recently was posting about that?
He was talking about people are doing key bumps of cocaine in front of me. Excuse me, Madison, point of order. Can you demonstrate a key bump? Because I bet you can, buddy. I bet you can. I bet you snorted some drugs, Madison Cawthorn. Just going by the odds there, you know?
Oh, man. Okay, so let's see here.
Was the first thing that struck you that was odd about that movie in the, like, right-hand corner of the frame at the very beginning?
What was in the right-hand corner?
The woman is in the president's dream is running away from the World Trade Centers before they blow up.
Oh, shit. No, I did not pick up on that.
Dude, go look on the trailer. It's the first thing on the trailer because I showed the trailer to my dad over it. We were overseeing my dad's new puppy.
Yeah.
So his name is Mo. He's cute.
Oh, yeah. What kind of puppy?
Hey, honey, what kind of puppy is that? Brittany Spaniel. A Brittany Spaniel.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he, like, I think he underestimated the fact that, like, a puppy's a lot of work, but this one is less work than a lot of puppies and should be, like, kind of good to go within 4 weeks. And then, you know, then he's, like, always got a friend around. Well, that's nice.
Yeah, for sure. No, like, big pro dog stance on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up more of a cat guy, and like my dogs, I had them for the last 2 weeks like by myself, and they by the end were annoying the shit out of me. But you know, that's just because you have to do everything for them.
Yeah.
All the time. Let them in, let them out, feed them, wake up, give them scratches, you know, like, but then they're really cute and they're really nice, and like, you know, so it balances out. I'm not quite like used to it. So it's like you've lived alone your whole life and all of a sudden you have a roommate.
Yeah. So do you think we're in the realm of predictive programming then with this 9/11 stuff?
I don't know. I just think the World Trade Centers were featured in a lot of 1980s movies. Just like, I don't know. They look cool, I guess.
The tallest ones in the city, right?
Yeah, they were always trying to sell office space there, maybe. Get people to come, like, dine at the top restaurant. I don't know, man. Like, it was weird. That was the first thing I saw, and I'm like, hey, wait, those are, like, the World Trade Center. Oh, look, they're blowing up. Oh, now the president is waking up, and he's got a portrait of Nancy Reagan next to him. This is going to be a wild ride.
Oh, hey, real quick, I might cut this and move it to the front, but do you mind if I do my little intro introducing you?
Please do. Go for it.
Today, we are joined by a very special guest, a repeat appearance. You know him, you love him, Matt Farwell of the Hunt for Tom Clancy blog. How are you doing today, Matt?
Hello, I'm living the dream. I'm sitting outside my wife's house using her computer because mine is old and a piece of shit. So you'll hear birds, you may hear traffic. I'm sorry. But I had to use the Wi-Fi, so.
Yeah, no, that's great. So today we are here to talk about a very interesting movie. Like, at first I thought it was going to be like the cheesy 80s equivalent of Inception, but it actually didn't end up being quite like that. It is still fundamentally like that, wouldn't be that far off, but like we are here to talk about the movie Dreamscape. So what were your initial impressions? Or I think you came up with the idea to watch this, actually. Like, where did you hear about this movie?
I just get like crazy notion. I search for crazy shit on the internet, like constantly, or on various databases, you know, like the CREST database, the CIA's one. And so I wanted to know, like, there was one movie about dreams or like something that I remembered watching when I was a little kid. Maybe it was Flatliners or something. Like they like kill each other for like brief periods of time. They're like med students who like kill each other to like be able to like go to the astral plane and like see other shit. And then, and I mean, I probably shouldn't have been watching this movie as like a 3-year-old, but you know, there I was. And so I Googled 1980s movies about dreams, and that one popped up first. And I'm like, wait, what? And like you, I thought, I was like, wait a second. Like when Inception came out, all the buzz was like how innovative the idea was. I'm like, fucking shit was like in a movie in the 80s in 84 when I was a 1-year-old baby. Like, come on. And so I wanted to watch it. And then I saw it had Dennis Quaid in it. And I was like fully in, you know, cause I really like Dennis Quaid. I watched The Right Stuff a lot growing up.
Yeah, no.
I mean, he's just great. You know, he's got a winning smile, and he's still like young and hasn't like all the Hollywood people seem like they become wax sculptures as they get older, you know? And I don't know what that is, but it is what it is. And so he still like looks like a human being in this one.
Yeah, no.
And the whole movie, actually, everyone looks like real people, which is an interesting thing too. You know, like the attractiveness quotient of the main cast of characters in this, like, would not make it past the threshold for any studio release now. Like, I think there's an unrealistic expectation for what people look like in movies today. Whereas the 80s, you're like, hey, wait, you're like a protagonist? You look like a weasel. Like, really? Shit, that's cool.
Yeah, no, like the 70s in particular too was just like the high point for like just a sweaty, bald, fat man, like in a leading role.
Yeah, you're like, okay, now you're owning this, I guess. Like, let's see where this goes. Huh. All right. Kate Capshaw was in this and she was looking good in this. Spielberg would marry her soon after, I believe.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's still married to Steven Spielberg.
Interesting,
right?
Let's talk about the cast here. So Dennis Quaid, definitely, you know, a handsome man. There's Max von Sydow, which I always love to see him in movies.
I was like I've seen this guy in something. What the fuck? And it took me until like halfway through the movie that I'm like, oh, he's the guy from Warriors, like, come out and play. Like, so yeah, he's just, but again, he's also somebody where, like, I don't know that I see him getting cast in much as, like, young Max Sydow starting out now. He's just too weird looking.
Yeah, like, he just looks like a normal dude. He is distinctive.
Yeah, yeah. And then Christopher Plummer, who, like, I was imprinted on from Dragnet, where he played the Reverend Jonathan Worley. who is an LA televangelist and the leader of the LA occult group, the Pagans. So that was fun. Then there's, no, I was just gonna go for who else, who plays the doctor with the like accent that I can't place,
like the doctor, like Paul Novotny.
Yeah, Dr. Novotny.
Yeah, that's Max von Sydow.
Wait, okay, then who's the Warriors guy?
Oh, I think...
The guy that plays the bad guy.
Oh, the psychic guy. That's Tommy Ray Glattman. Yeah. Wait, no, sorry. Okay. That's the character name. My bad. I think it's David Patrick Kelly, he's in Twin Peaks.
Okay, I flubbed that then. Oh, is he?
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so okay. That's the guy. Because I was like...
Okay, all right. Now I see...
I was like, Max von Sydow was not in freaking the Warriors.
You're like, and he's not in the Warriors, and he's also not like weird looking. He just like looks like a normal dude. Like, he looks like a guy you'd see on the train.
For the listeners at home, this guy is essentially, no, it's like the Twin Peaks, in the world of Twin Peaks, because I think a fair amount of my listeners probably know Twin Peaks. This is the character Jerry Horn, the playboy brother of the hotel owner, Ben Horn, that like kind of crazy guy. There's actually two Twin Peaks actors in this, which is interesting, I think.
Who else?
He's one of the thugs. It's Chris Mulkey,
okay,
who plays the character Gary Finch in the movie. But
okay,
in Twin Peaks, it's the ex-con abusive husband of like the diner owner lady.
Okay.
So two Twin Peaks actors. I think that's notable.
I mean, it's an impressive cast, man. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I flubbed the Max Van Sydow thing. I'm still embarrassed by that. But okay, what accent is he supposed to have, Novotny?
I was wondering that, because Novotny sounds like it would be Russian, but I don't know if it's actually mm-hmm. a Russian name, you know?
Yeah.
Czechoslovakian, maybe?
That would make sense.
Yeah, that would probably...
Madeleine Albright just passed away. She was Czech.
I don't think that they would be having a Russian scientist putting the...
No, but you could see them having a Czech scientist since, like,
mm-hmm.
Joseph Korbel, like, gave us the last 40 years. good work, sir, wherever you are.
There was also Norm from Cheers.
That was a shock when he turned up, and I liked his character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his character kind of, like, as far as he was the closest I've, like, seen in representation in film to like how squirrely actual writers are in real life. You know, because like the way he was always kind of had his nervous energy and like had a copy of his book on him, you know, all that, like it was weird to see him though outside of the context of the bar Cheers.
And then it is weird to see that almost every scene he's in a bar still.
Well, they were going with what worked, I think.
Yeah, no, we'll talk maybe about that character in a second, but like, I particularly want to chew on that character. But let's see here.
During the opening credits, have you ever done any of the Gateway Experience shit, like the stuff that the Monroe Institute would use to induce remote viewing states in people?
I have not done any of it. I have read some, though I'm not really like an expert on all of the like Stargate stuff.
It's some weird shit, man.
Yeah.
I think those opening credits, they're playing binaural beats.
Mm.
So like, because I did it for a few of the CD sessions and then it got too weird and I was like, I'm putting this shit away. That was my first, like, you hear that and then you see the World Trade Centers explode. And I was like, okay, this movie had my interest. Now it has my attention. Like, let's go. Let's see.
Yeah, no, it opens with a nuclear blast, which, like, I don't know. I feel like I grew up in the generation where I wasn't terrified by nuclear war. Like, 90s kids, right?
Neither was I. I wasn't terrified by the Russians. I wasn't terrified by nuclear war. Like it's interesting to see. There's kind of with my veteran friends that are above like 65. A lot of them seem to have like Cold War blue balls, where like they never got to kill a Russian during the Cold War, and all they want to do now is go to Ukraine and kill Russians. And I'm like, that's strange to me, man. Like,
it's very weird that like that really did seem to like hold over for decades.
I think, I mean, there's some powerful like propaganda they were all raised with, you know, and I guess the
mm-hmm.
nuclear, I lived for a good portion of my life near nuclear sites or recently decommissioned nuclear missile sites. And so like the idea that there were nukes was something, but the duck and cover drills, like, you know, this is what happens when Manhattan gets destroyed, never really like registered with me. So I don't, you know, even now, I suppose when, you know, responsible professionals who in measured calm tones on television are telling me there exists a threat for nuclear war, I'm still like, okay, like is that really going to happen? I don't know. I saw Terminator. That seemed bad.
Yeah, and like I can't imagine this probably would have been a super powerful opening scene for like the people watching it in theaters at the time.
In 1984.
Yeah.
Like that's like that's yeah, that's peak like Reagan buildup, man. You know, he's winning what was the one state he didn't win that Walter Mondale won?
I feel like it was Wisconsin. Minnesota or Wisconsin.
Or Minnesota. Yeah, Minnesota would make sense too. But yeah, this is like peak. And I couldn't help throughout the whole thing, and then especially once I saw what the financing of this movie was, I couldn't help but think, like, did they make like a whole movie just to like scare the shit out of the president that like he could be assassinated in a dream so they could get more research money to like do a bunch of like cutting edge chemicals and go talk to like gnomes on the astral plane?
Hey man, like a lot of people used to make a lot of movies for a lot of reasons, right?
Yeah, but did you look at who financed this?
No, tell me.
Okay. It was a Zupnik Curtis production. And for whatever reason, that got my interest. So Zupnik was a big DC, Northern Virginia real estate developer in the 1980s.
Hmm.
And Curtis was Tommy Curtis, who was a Yale man who opened a series of clubs throughout the DC metro area and was known as the matchmaker. His grandfather was gentleman Jack Cohn. His uncle was Harry Cohn, who in the movie The Godfather is the guy that gets his like the horse head put in his bed.
Oh yeah.
And during his tenure in DC, he opened a club called the Yacht Club and the Polo Club. And he said that he felt like Claire Booth Luce, the male version. And previously he had produced Hell Night with Linda Blair. And then he got into this and produced Dreamscape. You know, in a one-off production, the Zupnik Curtis Productions produced this movie and this movie alone.
Interesting.
Isn't that weird?
Yes. See, that's the thing. Like I never, like, I don't know enough about the world of movie producing, but like that seems like relevant to everything in this movie.
Well, yeah, because it was financed. They didn't, like, these guys didn't put up all the money. They were they were the bundlers of other people's DC money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, dude, this could have been an Oliver North operation. We don't know.
Well, okay, that's the thing, too, because, like, there's, like, a lot of stuff in this movie that is in it that doesn't really even need to be. Like, there's, like, multiple scenes at horse racing tracks, and...
Oh, I love those.
Yeah, I know, it's...
I used to work at a horse racing track.
Oh, really?
So, I was a waiter at a horse track in Virginia, up the street from the CIA's training facility, actually about 30 miles, called Colonial Downs. It's closed now because it was a massive front for organized crime. But
imagine that.
Weird, right? Who knew? I didn't. I was just a waiter. It was the best job ever. I was like 18 and my boss would line us up and give us those 80 or those 90s. Remember those 90s diet pills you could buy? Like
trucker speed type stuff?
Yeah, dude. So like give us trucker speed, give us beer. And then like these old ladies that thought I was cute would give me tips on the ponies. And so I could go home with like $200 or $300 a night. Like if I'm like, man, I was entrepreneurial as like a kid. I could make money. But yeah, wait, the first horse race that he's at, that we see the Dennis Quaid character, who's like this gifted psychic, who's like skipped town on the research experiment. I froze the frame and got all the horses' names.
What are the horses' names?
One, my notes say, okay, because I'm a freak, I got all the horses. One, Admiral's Runner. Two, Completely Fine. Three, High Compression. Four, Cover the Bet. Five, Crazy Lou. Six, Chinese Noodle. 7 heavy rains.
See, now I'm just like filled with a sense of paranoia about what these could mean.
I am too. right? Yeah, but we're not interested in parlor tricks. We're just interested in the fact that, like, also in this movie, the other interesting thing was the idea of the U.S. government concealing a high-level research facility on a college campus where you'd never expect it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too. It's not even necessarily concealed, right? It's just entirely within the college, which is...
But yeah. It's... People go there for their sexual dysfunction and ED,
yeah.
Right? They don't know that it's also like a CIA dream assassination project.
No, they do not.
You know? So, I mean, it's exactly, it's a beautiful front with like, you know, like if you also, if you tell someone like, oh, I work at like a dream ED clinic, like we like, check people's sleep to see like why they can't get boners. No one asks follow-up questions on that unless they have like impotence, you know, and then like maybe you refer them to the clinic and you get them to be a dream assassin.
In fact, it almost discourages overt interest because then you seem like you're interested in curing your ED.
It does. It's so, you know, it's slightly, just slightly embarrassed, you know, the perfect cover. And I often think of that, like, you know, I lived out in Berkeley for a while and it was always weird to me to talk to like hippies out there and be like, yeah, Berkeley's so liberal. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You have like a Department of Energy lab up there and like your political science department, like designed modern counterinsurgency, like go fuck yourself. Like this town's not liberal at all. Come on.
I know, like California is maybe one of the most fascist states, actually.
I'm like on most of the Clancy books are like 30 hours, but he loses his editor at some point, and the one I'm slogging through right now, it's like
they really balloon up. Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm on hour like 47 of 50. And my favorite thing in that is that the like racist militiamen, like rugged individualists from Montana, they're not from Montana at all, actually. They just moved there from Southern California after they like sold their construction business. And I was like, it's like, that's so fucking on the nose, actually, though. Yeah. I really like that. It's really painful, though. I'm sorry. I had to listen to like, we're coming up on the end of the month and I got to get my thing done. And so I was like, you know, just listening to like 3 hours of it today. And it's, I don't know if I'm beginning to hate Tom Clancy, but I know I'm beginning to hate some of his work.
Well, you're doing Executive Action right now, or Executive Order. What's the title?
Yeah. And it's so overstuffed.
That's a slog. I read that one when I was like 14 or something.
Oh, it's brutal. It's just like, it's the guy at the bar ranting about the tax code. And like, you know, that's fine. But like, yeah. So, okay. Anyways, back to the thing. Dennis Quaid like works his magic by just making money at the horse track.
Using his psychic powers.
Because he's psychic and knows which horses.
Yeah.
Which, from what I understand, that's actually one of the more difficult ways for the remote viewers to, like, do anything. Because they have trouble getting accurate outcome. Like, some guys tried to pick lotto numbers, you know, from the Fort Meade program. And they could never quite, or do, like, front run the stock market. I guess if you could do it, though, you wouldn't tell anybody. So
yeah, but, like, I thought that I had heard something that, like, the stock market was a little bit easier even because horse races, it's like, what do you got? Like, was it 6 or 12 horses going? I don't even know how many. And like, I feel like it's like harder to use psychic. Like I would imagine it would be harder to figure out which horse is going to win than like other types of predictions, like lottery maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think, makes you wonder why Zorro Ranch won the lottery twice.
and why Whitey Bulger won the lottery. Well, not psychic powers. It's just
maybe it was just plain corruption. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of interesting people have won the lottery.
It's weird that something that began with the mafia would wind up that being crooked, huh? Weird.
You know, the family of what's her name? The
Angela Merkel, or no, not Angela Merkel. That's the former chancellor of Germany. I don't know, man.
I'm botching this.
The one that married Harry?
Meghan Markle. Markle's family, they won the lottery, which kind of makes you wonder.
Did they really?
Yeah, man.
No shit. Really?
Kind of. And then they also had like cult ties. Kind of makes you wonder if maybe.
I mean, I do note that Harry joined the British Army and then went to Afghanistan, like, so that when you search for Prince Harry military uniform, the first thing that popped up wasn't a picture of Prince Harry in a Nazi military uniform at a Halloween party dressed like Hitler. But you know, that's just me. I mean, and you know, they're all Germans, it's fine. The you know, they're the House of Windsor, sure.
No more brother wars with World War II.
On my note, I have the whole secret government facility on a college campus covered as a program for sexual dysfunction. Mm-hmm. So, Jane, what you do here is count boners.
Yes.
You think about how many things are kind of out there halfway in the open and halfway not, right? With any of our cutting edge, like, research angles.
Yeah, like virtually every MKUltra project we know about took place at a established college, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Or an institute, like within a prison, or, you know, exactly. some sort of cover within a cover.
That's right. And so for the listeners, basically, the premise so far is that the president of the United States is having these dreams of nuclear war. And then there's a psychic, this kid, the Dennis Quaid character, Alex Gardner. He is like a genius and he has psychic powers. He's just dicking around, playing saxophone, sleeping around, gambling, making his money.
He's really having a great life, actually.
It seems pretty cool, actually. Yeah.
Like, it seems awesome.
Except that, like, both thugs from the racetrack and now government agents are both trying to get at him. So he goes with the government agents, or, you know, he goes with quasi. You don't really know who they are, but like, and they take him. And I wanted to ask you about the drive.
Yeah.
I was getting a little bit of like Esalen vibes from this Thornhill College. Not necessarily, okay, not the campus, but like the drive, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Going up the coast.
So it did it. If you actually do that drive, you go up through Malibu and then kind of around, and then you wind up in Oxnard, and then yeah, you could get right up to Esalen, Big Sur, all that area, and the college campus where they filmed it was in Stockton, so roughly the same distance up north too, you know.
Yeah.
And so, no, I got kind of the same sort of like, so are we on our way to Monterey by any chance? Like, where are we going?
Yeah. And so they take him to this Thornhill College, right? And they sort of do a song and dance about like, this is like just a normal facility. But then he's like left in a room, like an office, and he goes over and he writes on what looks to be just a wall, but he knows it's a see-through window. And like, they sort of reveal even more that this Alex Gardner character has, from, it's implied to be over several years since he was a kid, been participating in psychic experiments. And so he already knows a lot of the procedures and rigmarole of what they're doing here.
And he's able to, like, the way that they both him and the bad dude work themselves into their, like, the way they kind of jump out of their bodies is similar to the way the military remote viewers describe, like, what they called at the time, before the internet as we know it existed, going online.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's one of the, like, bigger meta themes, is that, like, I think the internet as it was constructed to be a technological parallel to what they could do within the remote viewing program. Because even the way that they gave people targeting data for, like, we want you to go see what it was like on Mars a million years ago. This is all real. Go look on the CIA's website. if you don't believe me. Like, they remote viewed back to Mars a million years ago when it was being destroyed, and there were large figures in, like, temples that were mourning their own destruction, kind of, you know, like Superman, like the story of Superman, which is, like, really fucking weird when you think about it. But, like, they would give people coordinates in a envelope, and the way the coordinates were structured is very similar to an IP address. And there's just all sorts of, like, weird, this whole idea of either jumping into, you know, some ethereal space where, you know, time, distance, and, like, secrets don't matter, and this getting into somebody's dreams, but being able to do it with a technology assist is it's also cutting edge research going on and operational shit going on at the time. So this actually isn't fiction that we're watching, you know, the idea of killing somebody in their dream, maybe.
Yeah.
But the idea they were trying to do this shit, and we're, like, using, like, SRI and a bunch of other fronts to do it, that's all real.
If you had to guess, do you think that they tried to kill someone in a dream?
Yeah, I would bet that they did. Yeah. Don't you think? Like,
yeah.
I mean, and they had all sorts of weirdos working for them at the time too. Like, you know, did Michael Aquino try and like kill someone with a demon? Probably. Like, you know, let's not like pretend anything would be that far outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Let's say a man could psychically project himself inside the dream of a sleeping person.
Oh, man. So within the film, I forget, what was the pretext that, like, why did Dr. Novotny, who's the head of this research facility, why did they bring the Alex Gardner character in the first place? I can't recall exactly.
Because Christopher Plummer's character, who runs not the CIA, he's the National Director of Covert Ops.
Yes.
Which throughout the movie is made out almost to be like a parallel executive position to the president that we don't know about, and then no one knows about, but this guy can just fucking murder people and it's fine. He knows about the president's nightmares, and he's trying to find the best person. He's basically trying to find the best person to assassinate the president, but we don't know that.
Yeah. Now, real quick. So we have this plot here with the president who's dreaming of nuclear war, and he's thinking about disarming. Or rather, you know, doing, what's the term?
The president has decided to lead a delegation to Geneva for disarmament with the Russians, which Bob Blair says he's going to emasculate our nuclear deterrent and bring the country to its knees.
Yes. And so there's this conflict where they're trying to help the president with his dreams, but, you know, there's this other issue with the president, like, and so there are two competing goals. One side, the Christopher Plummer character wants to kill the president in his dream, and the Alex Gardner character wants to, through the course of the film, he ends up, you know, trying to save the president's life. And so that's the general plot.
Yeah. Well, and he's a helper. He's a look for the helper. And we know he's a good guy because he helps a little kid confront the Snake Man.
Yes.
Which scares him.
So I really like how they kind of establish both psychics through a series of people they help or harm.
Yes.
Just people who are at this Thornhill College seeking help for their dreams, right?
Yeah, like the Warriors guy kills that old lady.
Yeah. And there's another psychic who I guess didn't do it right, and he ended up like completely mentally fucked up, and they take him away. He's like a vegetable almost.
He got snake bit by the Snake Man in a dream. And it didn't work. And so what you had to do in the dream was encourage the child to confront the Snake Man himself. You had to hold the Snake Man and let the child confront the Snake Man with an axe. And then that would work. But the first psychic didn't do that. But Dennis Quaid did.
That's right.
Jesus, what a weird movie.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night. Just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away into the magic night. I softly say a silent prayer like dreamers do. Then I fall asleep to dream my dreams of you. In dreams I walk with you. In dreams I talk to you. In dreams you're mine all the time. We're together in dreams, in dreams. But just before dawn I awake and find you gone. I can't help it, I can't help it if I try. I remember that you said goodbye. It's too bad all these things can only happen in my dreams. Only in dreams. In beautiful dreams.
And like, also, this is 80s like cutting edge special effects, which means it's like stop motion that looks like it was produced by like, you know, like, I don't know, somebody who didn't know how to do stop motion very well.
It looks like the Clash of the Titans or something.
It's kind of beautiful how cheesy it is. And I really admired this movie for like, it just went for it, you know?
It went all the way.
It really did. And I mean, they included the Apple II house footage, which I thought was cool. Oh yeah. And he helps that steel worker with his nightmare at the beginning.
Yeah, that was the first stream that he goes into, where basically he, okay, I wanted to talk about this because the Alex Gardner character, he's like a genius, so he's like a cocky dick, but like at his core, he's like a good person, I think. That's like how they write him, right? And so like the scientists are explaining how he can psychically jump into a dream. They're laying it all out.
It's called dream linking.
There's this really cool, like, 2001 A Space Odyssey looking room that like they can like control and view everyone's like vitals and everything.
It reminded me did you read X-Men comics as a kid?
Yeah, a little
like
bit.
The rooms that Professor X would go into Cerebro to like be able to psychically connect to everyone on Earth.
Yeah.
With a technology assist. It looked like that.
Yes, it did.
Which makes me wonder, like,
does that exist?
Do they have psychic, like human psychic energy amplification chambers? And like, you're like, what's this building on this Air Force base? Oh, that's where the like Space Knot Squadron is. We don't talk about them. You're like, okay.
And so the doctor and like this Alex Gardner psychic character, they're talking about going into this steelworker's dream. And I think the Alex Gardner character, he's just like, oh yeah, he probably just dreams about working at a steel mill or something. And it's like, okay, like, do you think that every person just dreams about what their job is? But then when he jumps into the dream, he actually is being a steelworker.
He's up there on a girder, and Dennis Quaid's supposed to just observe and report. He's not supposed to interact. But the first thing he does is like try to help, but it screws up, and then they both wind up on a girder over LA,
about to fall.
It seemed like a terrifying dream, honestly. The height dreams. Ugh.
Yeah, no, and he like Alex ends up falling, and I guess he wakes up before he hits the ground or something, because
if you die in your dream, you die in real life.
Who came up with that? They said it was like an old wives' tale, but like I've never actually heard that except in movies about dreams.
It's only in movies about dreams, but I know I've seen it in another movie. It might have been that Flatliners one where like if you die in that, you die in real life or whatever, but or Scanners or whatever the fuck it was called. But
it's so ubiquitous for being such a like probably made up thing. Like, I don't know.
Or, I mean, shit, man, maybe that's how they really like, they wax the hard targets that way, you know? Like,
yeah.
and then that right after that is when he's getting his CAT scan, and we have the first indication that like maybe Christopher Plummer's kind of oily government agent isn't the good kind of oily government agent, right?
The good kind of oily government agent.
Yeah, you know, like the like Nick Cage in Con Air, or or what's his name in Con Air? John Cusack. He was kind of oily in that.
Mm.
But he's like, I found that scene kind of, maybe because I just got a CAT scan. I found that scene like especially sinister, because like Dennis Quaid is strapped down on the machine, like, you know, and Christopher Plummer comes in and is like, hi, this research study that you're actually doing, it's a secret government program and I run it. Ha-ha, don't get up. No, I won't unstrap you. Goodbye.
He's so creepy.
It makes me wonder if he's like, if he was like a really nice, like decent guy in real life, you know, like some of the, or if those guys just like exude villainy in movies, if they're like, if they're that way when like, they're like dealing with the waiter or the valet or something, you know?
Yeah, no. And like, another thing, because I was like, at first I was watching this and I was like, why can't he just be normal? Like, just like gain his confidence like normal. But then when you realize that if this psychic dream program works, he would have the ability to kill literally anyone in the world
at any time.
So the idea that he's just like freaking out over the possibility makes more sense, why he can almost not hold himself back.
Well, and it would be a delicate dance, right? Like, you're trying to recruit someone to do something so powerful that you can't do it yourself. But if you can manipulate this person, then you can be very powerful. But if you can't, then what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, we're starting to get weather in. Yeah, I mean, and down to like, maybe it was just because I had one of the times I was back at UVA in like 2012, I think, I took this writing class. I don't remember what it was, but my professor was named Sidney Blair. And at one point in the class, she was like talking about, I had written a short story that took place in North Korea. And it was just like normal, like people in North Korea. And she's like, oh, my brother one time went on this delegation to North Korea. And like, he said, it was like, just like this and that and the other thing. And I'm like, so how is Dennis doing? And she like looked at me like, what the fuck? And I had just taken like a wild shot in the dark because her name's Blair. She's teaching at UVA. She mentions her brother who had gone to North Korea as a high level like government delegation. There was a guy named Dennis Blair who was one of the directors of national intelligence until he was fired by the Obama administration after a fight with John Brennan over drone policy. Blair's like, all right, he's like old aristocratic Navy guy. And so I was like, wait, like your brother's like the old director of national intelligence? Like, are you shitting me? Really? She's like, yeah, I don't like advertise that. I'm like, yeah, well, okay. You kind of did, but fuck, that's weird, man. And then he said he wouldn't talk to me for the story we were doing on John Brennan at the time, which I understood, but that was, so seeing that the guy's name was Bob Blair, I was like, oh, I love that shit. Like, that's about perfect.
Okay. I can't wait. I'm just going to ask you. So I have about two paragraphs I'd like to read from a book, and I want to get your opinion on this. Okay.
Let's go.
So, and I quote, "Don't kid yourself. This country is controlled by the Pentagon. All the major decisions in this country are made by the military. From my observation on the clandestine side of things, the CIA is just the whipping boy. The NSA are the ones who have the hit teams. Just look at their record. You won't find a thing. Look into their budget. You can't. For the life of you, you can't find any way they spend the kind of money they've got on the number of people who are supposed to be on their payroll. Even if they had immense research and development programs, they couldn't spend that kind of money. The CIA is just a figurehead. They are more worldwide, like the FBI is. The CIA are accountants, lawyers, file clerks, and schoolboys. They are information gatherers. They've pulled a lot of goddamn shenanigans, I'm not going to deny that, but as far as intelligence goes, the NSA is far, far superior to them, far in advance in the black arts. The CIA gets blamed for what the NSA does. The NSA is far more vicious and far more accomplished in their operations. The American people are kept in ignorance about this, and they should be too." Now, I got to ask you, what do you think of that? What do you make of that? I'll tell you what book it is. So it's from Operation Mind Control by Walter Bauer.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I think people get, naturally confused by the NSA and then other units that are at Fort Meade that also have an intelligence or covert action function that are not the National Security Agency, that are not in that glass box, right?
Mm-hmm.
And aside from that, I would say that seems entirely accurate. Like, look, we see or hear about a lot of what the CIA does. We don't see or hear a lot about what the military does, which was kind of, you know, something that I got to with the Humphrey Tom Clancy stuff. Like, it blew my mind that in the 60s, if there was a protest or a meeting with over 20 people there, at least one of them was an Army agent.
Yeah.
I mean, you had like the University of Colorado Boulder, the Students for Democratic Society, the first president was a covert army like captain who had to get reassigned after he threw a chair at a visiting Japanese American professor from California and got arrested until the army bailed him out. And then he got replaced by a sergeant who they had like infiltrated in there. And so, I mean, I think what people underestimate, and I'm an army guy, right? I was in the army. Like, I like the army. I think the army's good. I don't currently have any affiliation with them, you know, aside from the fact that I'm a veteran. But, you know, they're kind of like where, if I had any institutional loyalties, like that's where it would lie, right?
Mm-hmm.
The army itself, on its flag, it says 1775. Like, the army gave this country to this country, and it feels very protective over it. And it always has. Mm-hmm. It always will. And I mean, yeah, I pose this question to people. Just, it's 1945, right? And Franklin Roosevelt is found dead. Do you really think that General Marshall and Admiral King, who were effectively the two most powerful men in the country at that time, you really think they passed all the power on to a mobbed up haberdasher from Kansas City? You really think that happened? You think he had all the power? Like, maybe Eisenhower wrested some of it back, but I don't think so, because he warned about it when he left.
He sure didn't think that he had.
Yeah, you know, and then when you look into like into other aspects of it, okay, there's this guy named John Frenchy Grombach. He's the biggest spy you've never heard of. He's the guy that founded the organization, was part of the army organization that mostly ran through civilian cover, that mostly was there to spy on the OSS that they didn't trust. And then he gets into private stuff, then he gets into the Olympics. But here's something interesting. He also had a fondness for Switzerland. His name was Grombach. He was of French descent and had gone to West Point, did some interesting cutting edge work at CBS television while he was in the reserves in the interwar period. We shouldn't worry about that. But he founded this spy organization called The Pond that was supposed to have been disbanded in the 60s. I don't think it ever was. And they're self-financing. And if you go and look up a company called Grombach Engineering out of Switzerland, they're the people that did all the water, control all the reservoirs to Mecca and Medina, among other places.
Interesting.
And so when you start to think about the corporate intelligence, military, like tentacles throughout the world, you know, I think both of them do stuff, right? They just do stuff in a different way. But the power the military has over, I was explaining this to my stepdaughter when we were like driving back from, school the other day, that look, on every congressional delegation, every time a congressman flies overseas, or a woman flies overseas for a boondoggle flight, they're accompanied by a member of the military. They're met by a attaché at the embassy. If they're arrested, say, and charged with a crime in like, I don't know, like Pattaya, Thailand, you know, or somewhere like that. It's normally like a military guy that comes and gets him out with a bag of cash and then says, hey, don't worry, like, it's never going to make the papers. And, you know, remember to vote for like our self-propelled artillery piece next vote. Thanks. We got you. Like, you're our pal now. And when you think about it that way, like, yeah, between the military and the industrial base that supports it, that's embedded into every congressional district and into every kind of facet of our life. Yeah, who else pulls the strings in the country?
Yeah, and when people sometimes look at like domestic national politics and it seems like it's, you know, out of control or like that no one is really in charge, it's like, well, you know, we happen to have a handy term for such things, right? The deep state, such as it is.
Yeah, I mean, but and I lived in Turkey, which is where that term originated, you mm-hmm. know, and like it, I think you have to be willfully blind to ignore the idea that self-interested people in positions of power would both recruit and retain likewise self-interested people in positions of power to everyone within that circle's interest. I think you have to be like, you have to not have worked any job with real people in your life to like think that that's bullshit, right? Because at every I'm a waiter at a horse track, right? Like there are three other waiters conspiring to get better tables than me, mm-hmm. you know, and they're working together to like convince the manager that I suck. And meanwhile, I'm trying to convince the manager that I should like move up one floor to like really wait on the high rollers, you know?
Yeah.
That's like, that's the same sort of maneuvering. If you don't think that takes place with like organizations and people who have their reputations, millions of dollars, their lives, whatever at stake. And if you don't think people can keep like shit a secret, like, come on. How do you think the Manhattan Project like rolled on? And why do we only talk about New Mexico or Oak Ridge, Tennessee when we talk about the Manhattan Project? And, you know, no one talks about like, say, Pittsburgh or Berkeley or, South Dakota or Idaho or any of the other places that just kept doing Manhattan research.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think basically if both of us have a dream where someone tries to assassinate us tonight, we'll know we're right.
Or maybe they'll just wait, you know, a couple months. Either way.
Well, make it look natural. That's true.
They're like, Jimmy died of a massive Diet Coke overdose.
Like, yeah, Matt was found like asleep in front of the door where he was letting his dogs in and out at midnight because they saw a deer or something in the yard. The startling thing about the movie is it like cheesy special effects and dream linking like sequences aside, it is presented as something that's not ridiculous. Then when we look at it, we're like, oh, this shit's ridiculous because we've been conditioned to think that all that shit's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, the government at the same time and private industry are pumping, like, remember SRI, the company that did most of the research, like that Dr. Novotny would have been working for. Because Dr. Novotny was kind of a Hal Putoff character with like less creepy Scientology overtones.
Mm-hmm.
But SRI is also the company that powers the AI on your iPhone. So, you know, like think about that. Like wonder what, that's the shit they were doing in the 80s. What are they doing with a massive always on data set of every human being that is increasingly required to be networked into the system with a smartphone that has capabilities that I don't know. I don't know if this thing can detect my brainwaves and like decide when I'm in a better state to like be sold ice cream or whatever, you know, like.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy until you, okay. It sounds crazy until you're looking over DARPA projects and you see one that, and you're like, hey, wait, I've seen like this, this kind of like sequence before. And you're like, oh, that's because your methodology and the research study that you're currently running for DARPA is identical to the 2007 patent that Keith Raniere filed for how to detect whether or not a Luciferian can be rehabilitated. But yours is to detect whether or not you can predict whether a veteran's going to commit suicide. Cool. That's neat.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
And when you go back and look at both of them, then they're both sponsored by the Bronfmans, and that's always fun too.
Just a little added razzle dazzle.
Yay. A little razzle dazzle. The yeah. No, so this stuff, like, consider why we're taught that all this stuff is ridiculous, right? When go look up DARPA NEAT. NEAT, the neural evidence aggregation tool, right? Look mm-hmm. that up, go through the slide deck, and then go through the patents for Keith Raniere's how a determination as to whether or not a Luciferian can be rehabilitated. And you'll see startling similarities. And that's the world we actually live in, people. It's not the world I made up. It's not the world Jimmy made up. It's the world we exist in.
Yeah, no, like in some ways this movie is like there's almost like a veneer of like, you know, 80s movie conventions just on the top of it. Like literally at one point they say to the character, "You're a real bastard, Alex, but damn it, you get the goods."
Like, you get the job done. Yeah.
Most like,
you can really run that ball in for a touchdown. Like,
just the most like, you know, by the numbers, like movie, 80s movie, right? But then like,
but it's like Red Dawn for psychic warfare.
Yeah. But yeah. But even then it's like up. Maybe even smarter because they show them shaking Alex down with the IRS to like strong arm him into joining the program.
I mean, they use some mafia, hard nosed tactics, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then like, they literally say regarding the Christopher Plummer character, Christopher Plummer, like they say like, yeah, he runs the people that the CIA are afraid of. And it's like, most people don't realize that there's people the CIA would be afraid of, right? Like,
yeah,
there's like so much in this film that is like hard-nosed realism on top of this schlocky veneer, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think that's part of why I can't, like, it's one of the things that I was told about Tom Clancy books was that at a certain point Eric Prince figured out, hey, like, Dick Cheney reads Tom Clancy books and he gets ideas from them. So let's go find the writer, pay him some money, and like, all these like wild ass programs we want to do, we're going to get Cheney to fund them. And whether or not it worked, you know, you'll have to ask Cheney. But the thought did occur to me, just given the financing, the script, and the implied message, right? Which was basically, Mr. President, if you think about disarmament, we will send assassins to kill you in your dreams, right?
Yeah.
And like, what's that comedian who, you know, talks about when a president's after they're elected and they show him like the Zapruder film, but from another angle?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Anyways, that's what happens if you don't do what we say. There, because it was, I mean, the Blair character was interesting too, because he was almost like a devil character, right? He was very well groomed, very well presentable, always like appearing in positions of like places and getting in where, despite his role being covert, everyone knew who he was and that he was important.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you say that, because like I wrote down this note where I've never seen a movie where the US president is in the movie and he's like such a non-entity. He only speaks in a couple like scenes. Most of the time it's Blair who's like either telling him what to do or like angling to kill him. Like, the president really only makes a decisive move towards the very end of the film, right? And even then, he doesn't actually, yeah.
And even then, he doesn't, like, he just says to get away, like, get away, get Blair away from me. This is after Blair has, like, tried to kill him, have him killed in a dream. But no, it's Dennis Quaid, spoiler alert. Dennis Quaid goes vigilante in the end and fucking, like, ices Bob Blair in his dream. And then presumably goes and, like, bangs Kate Capshaw while, like, winning horse races. A great life.
Yeah, no. I wanted to ask you too, though, with the character of the science fiction horror writer, right? Like,
yes,
they depict him just hanging around the bar, but he keeps trying to talk to Alex Gardner, the psychic character, to try to, like, initially you get the impression that he just wants to, like, you know, get information for his, like, books, right?
He's just another scummy reporter.
Mm.
But then he kind of wants to warn him off. Like, he's like, dude, this shit's dangerous. Like, you know what's going on here?
Yeah. And so, like...
Right? Or am I misremembering that?
No, because you get the impression, they never say it, but you get the strong impression that he's not just a writer, which isn't to say that he's a Fed, quote unquote, right? But, like, he's more than just a schlocky author.
Well,
and, like, the idea of a writer being more than just a writer is something that fascinates me.
No, me too. And I think, yeah, like, he's not, he's someone of influence and mm-hmm. someone who, hey, I know 99% of people think that he's a tabloid reporter, but that guy gets the story. Like, that guy actually knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And there are people like that. I mean, you and I both know, like, that it's not necessarily the marquee names or the, like, you know, the people who, once you examine their family tree, you're like, oh, so, like, wait, you're, like, cousin? It, like, runs a publishing company? Okay, that makes sense. But, like, the people that actually get the goods a lot of times aren't the ones that you would expect, right? They're the kind of fringe weirdo characters that don't accept the face value of things.
Yeah, a lot of times it's like the tabloid sort of TMZ type of writers. I mean, what was it? Is it E. Howard Hunt? Is he the guy who wrote the horror novels?
Yeah, E. Howard Hunt wrote a series of spy novels. And they're pretty good, actually. He's not a bad writer. They're as good, I would say, as the James Bond ones, who just didn't have quite as good a branding.
Yeah, the David St. John. Well, yeah.
Well, and Richard Helms started off as a UPI reporter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing about, yeah, I think, and I've never been in the CIA. I've been proximity to, like, people that worked for them probably my whole life, right? But I've never been in them, and I'm not one of that cult. But I've been around them, you know, I've seen them work enough that mm-hmm. I can make some generalizations about things, right? And it's an organization that was founded basically by the Yale English department in the 40s, combined with, like, some more, like, cowboy elements. And these little shits, these kids have a little go-kart thing that they drive too fast down my street to make me mad. I'm an old man.
Just shake your fist.
I do. So, yeah. So, anyways, that, I don't know. I expected to go into it being, like, being less, more thinking it would be schlocky and less, like, when I'm like, oh, so wait, like, did we, like, how I feel at the end of, say, Clear and Present, or Cardinal of the Kremlin, where I'm like, hey, like, did the KGB director like fucking defect at the end of the Cold War? And like, we never heard about it. Did that happen? Like, did we capture a submarine? Like, what the fuck? Really? Because you kind of get the sense that Clancy was the way that people got the stories they couldn't tell officially out there in a way that no one could really like get them knocked, you know, knocked for. And I'm not talking the big like plot arcs, but every once in a while there are little like little details in Clancy books where I'm like, wait, what the fuck? Like, here's one. If you are a prostitute and the US government hires you to say like entertain a foreign dignitary, right?
Mm-hmm.
What agency actually like does that, processes that paperwork?
I don't know.
The Secret Service, according to Tom Clancy.
Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense, actually.
It would, right? So, I mean, yeah, and if you go back to, like, say, the DC Madame case, and one of the guys that followed along with that noted that the taxi service and the limo service that would take the girls, you know, to their appointments was owned by a DHS affiliate.
Interesting.
So, you know, I mean, they're in your dreams, they're in your bed, they're everywhere.
Good thing now it's all just Uber, right? So what is that, all Saudi money?
No, Uber is run by the government. Bob Gates is on the board.
Well, there you go.
And the security people are all ex-military intelligence people.
I mean, I can't imagine how valuable that data would be.
It's an amazing data, and it's also an amazing cover.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a car just idling in front of somebody's house. You're an Uber driver waiting for somebody. It's normal.
Ooh. And it explains too why they would just run it at a deficit, you know, indefinitely.
Well, okay. The iPhone, Google, Uber, all of these are rather improbable companies according to their creation myths.
Mm-hmm.
But they're incredibly, incredibly plausible companies if you consider them essentially like, you know, our version of state capitalism.
Yeah.
Where they're government fronts that are there to collect data that the government legally can't collect. And my big bugaboo on this one is Theranos.
Yeah.
Because the idea that Theranos was merely a fraud, like, if you buy that, like, fucking you'll buy anything, because you're gonna tell me that a real life data set of between 30 to 60 million individual blood samples that can be tied to a credit card and an address and a phone number, you're gonna tell me that data set, and when it's with a target population that like probably isn't in any other databases, because they haven't been to prison, they haven't been in the military, you know, they haven't been in any job that requires like DNA collection, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you combine that with ancestry for like a upper scale, right? And 23andMe, you've got a private genomic map of the whole fucking US. And you did it through three front companies and like a little bit of razzle dazzle magic. What could you do with that?
Well, I imagine you could do quite a few things with that.
Seems to do a few things with that. So yeah, these are, it's good that I have you to talk to, because, you know, when I start bringing this stuff up at like late at night, my wife's like, hey, listen, I got to go to sleep. Like,
you got to chill, man.
Knock it off. I'm like, hey, did you know, like, yeah, I don't know. There's all sorts of weird shit where you're like, wait, like, really? So, I mean, I think you guys should all watch this movie if you haven't watched it. It's really worth watching.
It is surprisingly, well, first of all, it's not bad in terms of like general 1980s movies. Like, it's well made, you know, you're not gonna like fall asleep probably. Maybe not. Like, I don't know if I would have enjoyed it if it weren't so pilled on the Stargate angle, basically.
Oh yeah, okay, you gotta suspend disbelief.
But it is extremely worth it for that. Yeah.
Yeah, and if also, like, I thought all this shit was really crazy too until I started like looking into the UFO stuff. And I went and talked to all those, like Tom DeLonge and the Lou Elizondo. Lou Elizondo was the first guy to tell me about remote viewing. And he's like, I can teach you to do it. Like, it's not hard. I learned how to do it. Then they got rid of the program and I had to become a regular spy. And like, I was like, what the fuck? Like, this is weird. But, you know, like, you look at that stuff and then you go back and you're like, wait a second. And then I started talking to like these army dudes that were in like it was called ISA back in the day, but they're Task Force Orange now. They're like a commando group thing. And they're like, wait, that makes Lebanon make so much more sense. And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, every once in a while we'd get this national level intelligence, like that we needed to go sit here and watch this house. And we'd go and like inevitably nothing would happen. So you're saying psychics were keying us in on like the houses we needed to go watch? And that's what, and I'm like, I mean, it would appear so. And yeah, so, you know, think about that. And then think about how they really found Osama bin Laden. It was because a Pakistani brigadier general defected. But it just was like, hey, he's here. He's been in Abbottabad, guys. You didn't know that? Like, come on. He's up there. He's a tall guy.
And then watch Zero Dark Thirty and contemplate the financing of Hollywood movies.
You know, I had Mark Bull tried to snake all my. I talked to him for 15 minutes. He wanted to buy the option to the Bo Bergdahl story, like early on. Mm-hmm. I wonder why. And he was trying, like Hastings had died, so. The intellectual property for the article that we'd written together, half of it was mine, and then half of it had passed to Elise, his widow. Mm-hmm. And Mark Bull was on the phone with me being like, hey man, like, why don't you just like bring all your notes and like come out to LA? And I'm like, I think I should like get Elise on this call since, you know, she's my business partner on this. Mm-hmm. And he's like, nah, but like, you know, what if you, I'm like, dude, you're the kind of person that would like legitimately try to like you were gonna try and steal from a widow. Like, holy shit. Holy shit, you disgusting slime ball. Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Is he gonna sue us if we leave that part in?
I don't know. When I called him and Catherine Bigelow unethical in an interview I did with the New York Times, and then they about 3 weeks later, it was a digital one, that paragraph was scrubbed and they said it was like something they couldn't editorially like verify or some shit. And then like 3 months later they bought Sarah Koenig's like fucking podcasting company, and I was like, oh, you scumbags. So then you can drop it. He is litigious and a little bitch. So
yeah. Have you ever heard of the author Michael A. Hoffman II?
Here's the other thing, like, that I've been threatened to be sued like multiple times. By a few, and the thing I always say is, oh great. So I look forward to the discovery phase. Mm-hmm. And that normally, like, I mean, because also generally, like, yeah, with that guy, you're like, you're going to sue me? Like, okay, let's see. And, you know, with us, like, I can't afford a lawyer. Like, you know, it's, or it would be, I would have to, like, convince one of my friends to like represent me pro bono, right? It'd be a big pain in my ass. But ultimately, like, they're not going to do it, you know, especially if what you're saying is true. Like, functionally, all I'm saying is that Mark Bull is basically a CIA asset who's addicted to cocaine and worked for a you know, front company that the Oracle guy's daughter started. Like, I don't know. I mean, if he wants to, like, prove that I'm wrong in court, he can do that.
Yeah.
But you might want to just cut all that. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah.
All right, man.
Before I say more bad shit. Yeah. It pissed me off, though. Like, what a fucking scumbag, you know?
Sounds pretty bad.
No, you know what the worst part was? The guy that wound up, like, saying he was going to buy the option was Todd Fields. And then he just sat on the option for a year until all interest in it, like, died. And then he quietly... I never got any money from him. And I would have gotten money from somebody else, but he outbid them and then never paid.
Mm.
And he's the guy that played the fucking piano in Eyes Wide Shut.
Well, so. Like, I've heard that there are a lot of people who, like, buy up the rights to certain media just to keep them from being produced. Like,
I've seen it in that.
I heard that about James Ellroy, I think.
I can, I mean, yeah, it's the same thing like the National Enquirer used to do, right?
Yeah.
But... Yeah, and that's where too, like, the overlap between the intelligence agencies of the like 30s and 40s and publishing and media, like Pearson Publishing, guys, who's that named after? Like, let's do a little thinking, you know?
Yeah. Do you have any closing thoughts or anything you want to say or plug or whatever?
The executive orders Hunt for Tom Clancy will be up soon, and I am working on another project that I'm not ready to talk about just yet, but it should be exciting. And yeah, that's it. That's all I've got.
Sweet. All right, thanks, man.
All right, thanks, man.
Take care.
I'll talk to you soon.
Time.